Suzanne Oakley, Kay Turner, Laura May McVeigh, Mary Bennett, Joyce McLean. On Wikipedia, there's a list of the names of people, overwhelmingly women, who were killed while out running. It dates back to August 1975. Nancy Finch, Gail Ornstein, Sandra Nessel, Pamela Ellen Page. The list is largely American biased, and as you get closer to the end, you'll find more familiar names. Those of Elise Fletcher, a Tennessee kindergarten teacher who was shot in the back of the head. She'd been out for her morning run. And Susan Carnetz, who ran at least a mile every day and had finished the Boston Marathon four times. Susan was gunned down by a 15-year-old male in North Carolina last year. In the UK, people were shocked by the murder of 23-year-old primary school teacher Aisling Murphy. She was killed at 4 in the afternoon while out running in County Offaly, Ireland. I'm Craig Lewis. Welcome to a special episode of the Running Tales podcast, where I'll be speaking to three women runners about their experiences of harassment, being assaulted, running in the dark, and victim blaming. It's a fascinating conversation, and the best thing I can do is get out of the way and let you get into it. I hope you enjoy listening to Dr. Aisling Morgan, Angie Skinner, and Michelle Heller. We're here to talk about women's safety in running, and I thought the first thing that might be useful is we just went through, said a quick hello and who we are. So Michelle, because you're first on my screen, if I could come to you first and you can just do a quick intro, please.
Yeah, hi, I'm Michelle Heller. I live in central Illinois in the U.S. I'm a very avid runner, training for a lot of marathons usually, and I run really early in the morning, like usually in the dark, 4:30 in the morning. So this is an important topic for me.
And Doc from the Running Punks.
Hi, my name is the Doc from the Running Punks, and I live in Cardiff, which is the capital city of Wales in the UK. I've been running for, this is my 35th year of running. I'm not a very good runner. I run for my mental health, and only the past couple of years have I joined a running group, and I would never normally do that. But I have been suffering from male harassment for the past 35 years, not just with running.
If we can come to you as well, Angie, and perhaps just off the back of your intro, if you could go into your experiences historically and more recently in terms of harassment or anything else from, well, presumably from men while out running.
Hi, I'm Angie Skinner. I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm originally from Memphis, which, you know, we've recently had a murder of a runner. And I started running very seriously in 2014. Like you, I run for my mental health, and I was going through a divorce at that time. And I felt like that was just sort of my only solace. And now it's, I mean, I think anyone that runs on a consistent basis, if you don't get to go, there's, you know, it's a range from mild disappointment to, you know, dismay. So even yesterday, I was harassed on the street twice. I'm 56 years old. I consider myself to be in fairly good shape, but it doesn't matter what age you are. It just seems like there's always an opportunity for someone, you know, to hang out their car window, to chase you, to swerve at you, you know, yell at you, like all kinds of things, or even try to get close to you physically. And so one of the reasons why I wanted to come to this podcast was because I arm myself, not with a gun, but I carry a lot of things with me to protect myself. And that was something that I wanted to bring to you guys, is just what I'm using, where when I leave my house, I feel I'm as safe as I possibly can be.
What kind of things are they, Angie?
I don't know if you guys carry water. I am particularly fond of the Fuel Belt brand of water belt because it has a pocket on it. And in that pocket, I carry some just sort of short, I'll say short range mace. It'll spray 15 feet. I don't know if are self-defense things like that readily available in the UK. I mean, I know you can't have a weapon. Maybe knives are more common in the UK. Can you get your hands on mace?
I think you might be able to, but I never have. I think what we have more commonly in the UK is rape alarms.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. Well,
it's a noise.
Yes, I understand. Well, I was laughing last night. I'm staying in a hotel right now, and I was talking to the young lady that works up front, and she said I carry bear spray. which will spray 30 feet. You might have heard a lot about bear spray from the January 6th riots that some people, that some of the directionists brought bear spray. I have never tried it, but she said it'll spray 30 feet. So you're really looking at an opportunity to tell someone, if they're getting too close to you, I have this and I'm prepared to use it. And most people, I'll just say most men, because that's just who it's going to be. Most men will cross the street or back off because you're very calmly telling them, I have this and I'm willing to use it. The other thing that I carry that I feel really strongly about is called a Go Guarded ring. I don't know if you've ever seen these. They're about $14 US. It's a plastic ring. And it has a little bump on the interior of it, and they sell different sizes so that you can custom fit it to your finger. I wear mine on my middle finger. And it is a sharply pointed serrated ring that will easily cut you if you're not careful. I've cut myself and it like a little tiny bit, and because it's serrated, it bled for 2 days. But it's designed to go into your assailant and pull out a plug of skin. You know, and I'll always tell all my friends or whatever that, you know, if someone that I, there's a potential that I could be harmed when I'm out on the road, but I'm going to try to harm my assailant. You know, that is definitely part of my plan. I am not going to go down without a fight. And those two things for me are essential. I also have, a pair of gloves that are, they're black on the top and they're yellow on the palm. And they're thin nylon. These are made by Nike. And those have probably saved my life from getting run over. I can't tell you countless times. I always wear my gloves because they're so visible that, if it makes you more visible on the street, you can direct traffic with your gloves. And I always run out in public. I would like to know, how are you guys doing if you're running, number one, in the dark, and number two, if you're trail running? How are you protecting yourself?
Well, first of all, I do want to say, I mean, especially with what happened in Tennessee last year, you know, there was a lot of victim blaming. You know, why did she do this? Why did she do that? And that just pissed me off.
Sorry, Michelle, just to interrupt. Yeah. We're talking about Elise Fletcher here, aren't we?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Shot in the back of the head.
Yeah. You know, I think what Angie's doing is just fine. You know, I think women should be allowed to do whatever they want to do to protect themselves, whether that's not have anything with them or, you know, have all these various items with them. For my safety, I always have pepper spray with me. That's, you know, that's number one. And it's great. It's a handheld. It just, I don't even have to hold on to it. It actually holds on to my hand. So, and I always have my cell phone with me because I am by myself alone in the dark every day. And that was just how I felt for my own safety. You know, I'm sure there's more things I could carry. But for me, that's what makes me comfortable. So that's what I always have.
Did you ever consider, after that horrific incident, did you ever consider not going out? I'm not saying that people should be asking you that, but for your own mind, did you ever consider, I'm not going to do this anymore?
You know, it did scare me. I'm not going to lie, because Elise was very, that really resonated with me, because she was running early in the morning in the dark by herself, which is right. Exactly what I do every single day. I'm always by myself because, you know, nobody wants to come meet me in the country at 4:30 in the morning. It's weird. of course the thought, you know, I have a treadmill in my house. I could easily just stay inside and be safe. And the thought did cross my mind, but at the same time, it's like, this is what I love. This is what I do. I don't want to let this take over my life. And I just continued. I had lots of friends and family reach out to me. They're like, you're not still doing this, are you? And it's like, yeah, I am. Mm-hmm. I try to be safe, but you know, I'm not going to turn my life upside down out of fear. So.
And you mentioned victim blaming as well. Did you feel that there was, it's not a did you feel question, that there clearly was a lot of people saying it was her fault for being out at that time. How did that make you feel?
Yeah. I mean, I had other people, I wouldn't call them, they were blaming me, but yeah, it was like, well, you shouldn't be alone. You shouldn't be doing this. And it's like, She was out for a run. She didn't do anything wrong. I mean, if a girl wants to go out in her sports bra by herself in the dark with no weapons, she's doing absolutely nothing wrong. And it really pisses me off that people are like, why did she, why did she, why does she, instead of why did he, you know?
Absolutely.
It just ticked me off. It really, you know, the victim blaming is just, it's insane. And I remember watching, it was like a major news broadcast and they were, you know, of course, sympathetic about this whole thing. But one of the first things the woman said was, well, I mean, that's why women shouldn't be alone. And, you know, it's like, no. that's not what you should say here. And, you know.
Yes. Yeah, when the first news clips came out and she had on a sports bra and little bitty running shorts.
Yep.
The media jumped on the fact that, you know, that was about, it had something to do with what she was wearing.
Right.
I will say this, and I believe this with all my heart. Eliza Fletcher could have outrun her opponent. She could have outrun him all day long. She just let him get close enough to her and he knocked her out with one punch. And that's really what happened. He got close enough. He cold cocked her and he put her in his car. And so, you know, that's the other thing. It is people blaming her when, if she could have avoided him or run faster than him, she'd still be alive today.
And I played that scenario out in my head a lot. I always want to know, you know, if a car does slow down, what am I going to do? I've played the scenario out in my head many times. So I'm hoping I will at least be prepared and know what to do if it happens.
And Doc, can I maybe bring you in here? Because I know you've got some quite strong views on being afraid of the dark or not.
Yes, it's very interesting listening to what you both have to say. And one of the things that resonates with me quite a lot, Michelle, is people saying to you, you shouldn't run on your own. And in the UK, what is interesting is that it seems that even when people are together, if a man is committed enough to want to kill women, then it doesn't matter how many people are there. So in the UK, we've got instances of two women were having a picnic in the park one evening. They were sisters. They were both killed. There's the Irish woman, Aisling Murphy, who was killed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She was running. There are many, many, many incidents of women who are killed at any time of the day or night, whatever they are doing. And the media and everybody else focuses on why they are there, what they should do to avoid things. And in the UK, there's very much this discourse of avoidance, what you need to do to sort your own safety out. And it's very interesting listening to you, Angie, particularly, because I think if women in the UK were to carry the things that you were carrying, the women would be considered the problem.
Oh, really?
And if I think if any, you know, if a woman sprayed a man, no matter what she was doing, it would be her fault.
I could definitely see a situation where if a woman did that over here, that they'd be the one who ends up in court.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Because what we find in the UK very much so is that women are by and large very much not believed about anything that they say. And there's also a very strong idea, like you were saying, Michelle, which is, why are women even out? And my answer is, we make up half the population. We should be allowed to go wherever we want, whenever we please, and do whatever we want, in whatever clothes we wish to wear. But in Britain, that is very much, the discourse is very much around what women should and shouldn't do. So the police, for example, say things like, how to keep safe. Here's how you can keep safe when you're running. Don't wear earphones. Tell somebody where you're going. Change your route all the time. And my thing as part of the group that I'm in is, hang on a minute. What are you telling men not to do? So one of the things we've claimed the hashtag change the discourse around talking about women's safety, because talking about women's safety and keeping safe is a nonsense, I think, because you can't. You have no idea when you might be attacked, where you might suffer harassment, as you say, where some man might lean out of a car. I have it regularly when I'm running with the men who, what do you call them, the garbage men. They think it's hilarious to dance in front of me or try and block me. And while that doesn't sound terribly problematic. I mean, I've been running for 35 years. I'm the same age as you, Angie, but I've been running all this time, and I've had that pretty much every single week of my life. So I don't want to have to put up with it anymore, you know. And it's interesting, I was on the I was talking on the news one day in the UK, and the woman who was interviewing me said, the thing is, you know, and she was a similar age to me, and she said, you get to a certain age and you can, you know, there's all sorts of things you can do to call it out. And I said, why should I have to call anybody out? Why can't I just be left alone to do what I want to do? And the fact is that we're not, we're targets, we're objects in the world. And I think quite a few men don't like that, and they want to repel us. And this is also true for people who use the gym as well. For example, in the UK, when the pandemic happened and all the gyms shut, more women went out on the streets to exercise, and they might have been going to the park to do HIIT exercise or whatever. And considerably more women were harassed because men didn't like it. They didn't like to see them there. It's almost as if women are invading men's space when they go outside.
I think it's really interesting, you know, just to, from my own point of view, I've been running at all times of the day for not quite 35 years, but certainly a good 20 plus. And I don't remember anybody, male, female, anybody, whatever, running out in front of me, dancing in front of me, in front of the streets. It doesn't happen to men. There's been men may turn around and say, oh, it's just a laugh. But if it's just a laugh, why are you only doing it to women?
Because I think, you know, Angie and I, you were a similar age. I don't know how old you are, Michelle, but it isn't about the way we look. It's not like a sexually driven behaviour. It's about men wanting power over us. They don't know that. I don't think it's conscious like that. But I think when they see women, and either they don't like them, or they want to feel better about themselves, so they start catcalling or they'll throw things. And it's about repressing women. And once you start saying things like that, people get really, really angry. It's like, well, what else is it? It's not sexually motivated.
They power move. I agree with you. You know, and I yesterday, just for example, I mean, Memphis is well known for being crime ridden. And so I was at my hotel and there was a policeman outside in the parking lot in his vehicle sitting there. And I went over, his window was down, and I said, may I ask you a question? And he said, sure. And I said, I'd like to go running out here on the most well-traveled street, you know, in the city. There's thousands and thousands of cars. I'd like to do that this afternoon. Do you think that I'll be safe? And he said, yes, but go before 5. And so, you know, and I guess it's, you know, maybe it's drinking culture or something, you know, everybody starts drinking at 5. I don't know. But I thought that was a really interesting response.
And it's all about controlling us then, isn't it? Where somebody else's actions, people who want to behave in a certain way will start doing that at 5, and that precludes everybody else.
Yes, I mean, I guess so.
But that is held as being more important than you wanting to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
And the other thing is, I'm back to what we were talking about earlier about what you're wearing. I'm just curious, what do you guys, what are you wearing on your average run? If it's been cold, you've been wearing tights. And
no, I'm still wearing shorts.
You're still wearing shorts. Yes. Okay. That's great. I mean, I might wear a running skirt, or I might wear just like, you know, elastane tights.
What about you, Michelle?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have changed because when I first started running way back when, especially, I want to talk more about summer. I mean, winter, obviously, all bundled up. But during the summer, I used to, when it was really hot, wear a sports bra. And after getting catcalled so many times, I mean, it wasn't because I felt like I wasn't allowed to wear it. It was just that I got tired of it. And I would start wearing a shirt even when it was 100 degrees out. And so that I would still do that during the summer, you know.
See, because I've gone the opposite way around. I've taken more clothes off now.
Yeah.
Because if I want to, and I've had twins, I'm not, and I say this, you know, I'm not a glamorous, pretty looking woman at all, which is fine. But if I want to wear my running bra, I will. And what I found quite interesting is that when I'm abroad, say, for example, so you said it's like 100 degrees where you are, Michelle. So when I go abroad, if I go somewhere hot like Spain, I'll run in my bikini. And actually, it's fine there because everybody else is running in their bikinis too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You're allowed to do whatever you want, anytime you want. But, totally.
Because we're running in the day, we're running with everybody else. I'm right. Sure there are parts where you wouldn't and shouldn't ever run in a bikini. I'm sure there are parts of the place I was in. But I was along the seafront. Everybody else was. And I was like, hey, one guy was running in a thong. I kid you not.
Yeah.
That is amazing to me because I would never have the courage to wear that little. And I think that's where I am. And you know, and I almost feel apologetic that we have to talk about what we're wearing, but we do.
I think it's anybody else's business.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But the problem is that people make it their business, don't they? And as you say, Michelle, it gets really, really tiring. We did a thing it was a very boring, innocuous thing, but somebody in the running group had found a man who was a sports coach saying, oh, I'm really sick of seeing these women with their bellies hanging out in the gym. I'm tired of it. I've had enough of it. They're just trying to exercise in their sports bras. I don't want to see it anymore. Put a top on. So we all got really furious. And then one Sunday when we were out running, I was like, come on then, girls, let's take our tops off. And we had our photos in our running bras sort of going like this. You know, this whole, it's so tiring, it's so boring, the amount of things you have to think about, as well as you might be running to a training plan. You might be thinking about, oh, gosh, I need the toilet. You might be thinking about, oh, I hope my drink doesn't run out. There's all these things you already have to think about, as well as your personal safety, and as well as your, I don't want to get shouted at. The thing I found is that it doesn't matter how I look. It doesn't matter whether I'm just wearing my running bra or if I'm wearing my bikini. I'm not doing my bikini in the UK, but I would do it abroad. It doesn't matter. I will still have some sort of harassment. If somebody's going to do it, they're going to do it. And it doesn't matter because again, it's not about your body. It's about the very fact that you're there, I think. And I think a lot of men find it problematic when they see women outside.
Just a question I thought over. I wonder what you think of this, and it's quite possible that I am utterly and entirely wrong, and I'm quite happy for you to tell me so. But so my wife goes running. Sometimes she'll go running in the dreaded dark and so on. And I have on occasion gone, do you know what? I'm going to come with you. And that's because she's my wife and I love her and I want her to be safe. But am I entirely wrong in doing that? And do you have the same reactions from your other halves as well?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with asking. I mean, you know, especially with somebody you know. I wish my husband could go with me every morning just because it's fun. But, you know, we have a little one, so I have to go by myself, which is why I do that. But no, there's nothing wrong with asking. So, yeah.
Well, I think it's very endearing that you would want to go with your wife. I think that's awesome. I don't have that privilege. So there's no one to go with me, which might be another reason why I choose violence.
No, not at all. No, I think that's fair. I think that's really, I think that's good of you to do that is what I mean. I can't think of the word, but I think I'd probably tool up as well. I like running on my own more than anything else. I'm not, I am very much not a sociable runner. My famous quote in Running Punks was, I don't like people very much and I like running with them even less. I know, but I take the group on a Sunday and that's great because we have a very slow 10K and we had a new person this morning and I said, it's just about chatting and running. And I mean, we've had people trying to cycle into us and get very, very angry with us as a group. That has a couple of men have done that as a group, but I have never... I love my husband very much, but I don't want to run with him either.
She might not really want to run with me half the time.
But also, I think as well, I think I've always run on my own, but also now I have children, it's more important to me that I have time to myself.
Right.
And I don't know if that's similar with you, Michelle, or you, yeah. Andy, if you have it's a bit of freedom. And I think that's partly why it's so aggravating when your mm-hmm. freedom is curtailed by somebody stopping you, somebody shouting at you, somebody wanting to have a laugh with you. I've had people being angry with me because they've tried to stop me to ask me the time. And I'm like, I'm running. Oh, well, you know, you're so rude. It's like, people, admittedly, that was before everything was digital. But, you know, there was a sense that because I was a woman that I would stop and help.
The expectation is that you, as a woman, you're supposed to defer to whoever it is.
Absolutely.
Whether they ask you something, if they want you to move over, if they, you know, if you're on a sidewalk, they expect you to move over for them. You're supposed to smile and be sweet, you know. And I, like you, I feel like my time running, it's the only real freedom I do have. I think I don't run with someone else. Specifically, since November, I have been running sprint drills. I'm out of breath. I don't want to talk to anyone.
That's exactly right. It's, you know, in my house, I've got at least three people speaking to me all at the same time. And when I'm running, there's nobody talking to me. And I really like that, you know. And as you say, you might be out of breath, but actually it's just nice to have some time to yourself, isn't it?
Right.
And it's purposeful.
Michelle, that's probably a great reason to go out at 4 o'clock in the morning, isn't it? You're not going to get disturbed by anyone.
There's nobody out. yeah, it's very quiet. It's very nice.
And what have been your experiences, Michelle, out early in the morning?
Luckily, I'm out in the country, so I almost never see anybody. So I'm by myself in the dark running around. So when I do see a car coming, that's always kind of gets your heart racing. Just a little bit, because I'm not used to seeing people out, you know. And I did have an experience once where somebody did stop, and it really scared me. It turned out it was a neighbor introducing themselves, but of course, you know, you're on high alert. I'm ready to run, ready to fight. But yeah, it's really nice just running by myself, and thankfully nothing's happened while I've been out in the country. So, but I'm prepared.
I want to talk over a scenario, really, and it goes back to that being afraid of the dark, worrying about running at certain times and so on. Now, I had a male friend of mine, who walked home at about, it probably was about 4 in the morning, but that had been because he'd been out all night, and he decided it was a good idea to walk home, and he decided it was a good idea to walk through an industrial estate at 4 o'clock, and he got mugged, and he had his phone stolen, and he had his wallet stolen, and he was given a black eye. Are there not scenarios where actually it is a better idea? Because we all told him, what were you doing walking around at that time of night down that estate? Something was bound to happen. Are there not scenarios to play devil's advocate, as it were, where people, irrelevant of whether they're women or men, shouldn't be out at that time because it is potentially dangerous?
But surely it's nothing to do with the time of day. It's to do with whether somebody sees an opportunity to mug somebody. It's not about time of day or place. I mean, I've been sexually assaulted on the tube in London in the day, you know, and nobody else was helping me. And I literally had to shove this guy. His hands were all over me. It's just he saw an opportunity and he took it. It with your friend, you know, he was unlucky, but he might also be mugged just popping out to the corner shop at 8 in the morning for a pint of milk. So the problem is you can't mitigate for this kind of attack or form of harassment. You cannot. And I think both Michelle and Angie were saying that, you know, we don't want to curtail our lives for something that might happen. And I get a lot of women being quite angry with me on social media when I say things like this. And I say I understand that some women are scared of the dark, and they're like, that's just such unhelpful thinking. You can't tell people to be scared of the dark. And I say, well, I'm not I'm not telling people, I'm just agreeing that for some people, the thought of running in the dark is really bad. And I know a lot of women who come October in the UK say, that's it now. We can't go running after work because we have to run after work. And the light has gone. And there's no way we're running in the dark. No way. And you know, one time I was on a radio program and I was being interviewed about some of the stuff we do in Running Punks. And the guy said to me, he wanted to play devil's advocate, Craig. And he said to me, the thing is, though, right, what if you say to somebody, you say to a woman, it's fine to go running in the dark and she gets attacked. Isn't that your fault then? And I took a beat. My mic dropped on the floor. And then I said, how is that even a thing? You know, because all the whole time you're saying who's allowed out and who isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just about opportunity. It's not at all about the dark. And it can't be about the dark because so many people are harassed and killed in the day.
That's very true.
And I think a lot of people, when it comes to when they talk about the dark, I think it's because, no, you know, like, especially I'm out at 4, nobody else is awake. You know, you scream, who's going to hear you? But I think it's important that you should be able to go when you want. I mean, I don't go at 4 in the morning because I'm like, hey, I want to get up really early and do this by myself. And, you know, it's because this is when I can do it. I can't do it later. I have to work. I can't do it after work. I have to get my child, you know, and it's, this is the time I can do it. So that's why I do it. It's, you know, so when people say, why do you do this? Well, because that's when I have to do it.
And I think a lot of people don't understand the lives of some women then and responsibilities that they may have around, particularly around childcare, which is that you can't do, you know, your job and your child might need you after work. And that's just the way it is. If you want to run, it has to be at that time, which is perceived of as being unsociable or dangerous. But it isn't really the fact is that you're out and you're doing it. And it doesn't really matter what time of the day or night it is. But also, you know, in the dark, no one can hear you scream. It could be 9 o'clock in the morning and light as day and somebody might ignore you.
Everybody works during the day, right?
So exactly.
And Aisling Murphy was attacked at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, wasn't she, when it was light?
Yeah. All the time I think about Aisling Murphy and I think, you know, you can imagine what was going through her head. She probably looked out the window in the morning and thought, do you know what? I'll have a run. I'll run after work. It'll be a bit lighter and a bit warmer then. I'll probably do that. And somebody wanted to kill a woman. And that was it. So, I always think about what was going through her head. Probably that it was going to be a bit lighter and a bit warmer. I'll go after work. I'll go at the end of the day, not the beginning of the day.
I mean, I typically go in between 3 and 5 because I can take a break from work then. And that's when it's warmest in the winter.
Yeah.
You know, but I think about if it's dark outside, I typically wear a Tracer 360. Do you guys have those?
Is it like a locator thing?
It's the battery operated thing that you put over yourself. That's made of, it's two LED tubes and it's like, it's a light that's on you where you won't, where motorists can see you and they won't run over
you. Right.
I can't tell you how many times if I've been running in the dark that I'll see some creepy person and I'll turn it off so that they can't see me.
Yep.
So you don't, you know, it's to protect you from being hit by a motorist, but it will also put a spotlight on you if you're the only person out, you know, it's like, hey, look at me, you know.
That's exactly why I don't wear lights. I don't want somebody, a mile on a road on the other way, like, what is that? And coming to investigate. I don't wear lights. Yeah.
Can I just say something, though, as well? I think as women, we live in a patriarchy and there is nothing for us. There's nothing purpose built for us. There's nothing. Social values are not made by us. So I think the fact that we, the three of us, go out running when we want to go is brilliant. And I think we should never forget that. We sometimes take the fact that we can go out running in a patriarchal society where lots of men don't like us. And I'm very, you know, that sounds very sort of weird and paranoid maybe, but I genuinely believe that, that there is nothing in the world for women that women have made or that benefits us hardly at all. So I think the fact that we go out and do what we want to do is very, very good. But the fact that we may be scared to do it is very bad and very negative. And I don't really hold with the, this is not helpful thinking that... Right. That some people fear the dark. I think it's perfectly reasonable to fear the dark. Perfectly reasonable, really.
Yes. Well, considering all the things that have happened, I think it is reasonable.
Totally. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I feel, and this is just me, instead of feeling frustrated or terrified when I'm out running, I feel angry. I am sick of this shit. I probably come off as a angry white woman, you know what I'm saying, when I'm on the road. I think I look angry, and maybe that's another reason why people, you know, generally have left me alone, because I look like I'm ready to do battle because I'm over it. And I feel like we as women, if more of us took that stance, there would be a whole lot less harassment, and there would be a whole, there would be fewer murders and assaults, because we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, sort of, you know.
We are, but we still live in a patriarchy, Angie, where we're going to be oppressed. But one of the things I think very strongly, if people are going to say that we shouldn't be out in the dark, then I want to pay less tax on lighting the streets and for police. Yeah. Then if, particularly the British police, they're not going to protect me, are they? If anybody's read the news recently, it's absolutely abhorrent. Mm. But we pay for that. We pay for the police through taxes, and we pay this for the light, and we don't pay any less than men. So if we're not supposed to be out, then fine. We'll have a curfew, shall we? But do you know what I mean? And you know, people are, oh, and I'm like, no. But I'm with you, Angie. Sometimes I'm outside and I am boiling and I like raging mad. And I have to go take myself to one side and just mm-hmm. go, it's okay. It's for perfectly reasonable for you to feel this angry. It's all right. It's okay. You know, and then I look for ways that I can channel the anger, because I'm ready to blow. And I've got young girls, and I was saying to one of them earlier, oh, I'm going to drop you off because I'm going on the radio in a bit to talk about men harassing women, because I want things to be different from you, for you. And she was super sweet. She was like, oh, that's so great, Mum. Thank you for that. And I don't think she really understands. But also my perspective is that we need men to stand up for us, yes. because men live in a patriarchy that works for them. Doesn't work for all men, but the many men very much benefit from the system that they've built, and it's not in their interest to let us in. And that sounds very sort of I don't know, Angie, I feel like you, I'm just absolutely ready for a massive fight, and I'm so done with it. But when we speak like this, it makes us sound like massive weirdos, and I'm like But all the time, I think, do you know what? This is an appropriate reaction. Actually, we're appropriate. And yesterday in London, there was a march for women against violence. I don't know how many women, I haven't had a chance to see the news yet. But women are absolutely fed up of it. But there's nothing we can do until men stand up for us. And it's not in their interest. Many men who are powerful is whom I mean. But it's not in men's interest to let us in on the power or to stand up for us, because it means that their position will become lesser. And why would they give it up? They rule the world. Why would they give it up? So we're fighting that, but I'm not giving up.
Yeah, I think we've had some, you mentioned the police issues. We've had some ridiculous issues recently, Wayne Cousins for one, but also
not things recent, like the... Sorry, Craig, not recent, for over a very long period of time.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to mention the recent ones, which is what I meant by that. But I totally take your point. But yeah, Wayne Cousins and then finding out that there's lots of other officers in a similar situation to him. And then also we saw, and I don't know whether this cuts across to America at all, but the way that Nicola Bulley's issues with alcohol and the menopause were portrayed by the police and then subsequently by the media, and all this lady had done at that point was go missing. She'd had the temerity to go missing, and suddenly her whole life was being portrayed out there. So I think there's definite issues that need to be addressed. But I'm also really interested in what reasonable men can do, because, you know, the obvious answer is don't attack women. But obviously there's more to it than that.
Talk to your friends is the thing. I think, I don't know, and I'm very uncomfortable with things like bystander intervention. I'm quite uncomfortable about that, because there have been quite a few incidences of men being killed with just one punch. And I think you have to feel very confident as a man to weigh in on something happening. I also know, I mean, living in Wales, the misogyny and the homophobia is rife. No matter what anybody says, it very much is. And I know there's a gay guy, Michelle and Angie, who was a rugby player. And he's the first openly gay rugby player. And he's a very tall and very big man. And when he goes out for a couple of drinks with his friends, he often gets other men challenging him for a fight that he has to. He cannot be seen to engage with them, so he might end up getting beaten up because he's a big guy. And so I do find bystander, that's the whole thing that's happening in the UK now, which is this hashtag, don't stand by. If you see something, call it out, which is all very well. But if you've got somebody who's very, very committed to harming somebody and or killing them, it's very risky. And I think it should be much more about behaviour change from an early age. My children, when they were 5, were told that girls couldn't play football. And then that escalated to lots of other unpleasant things about what girls can and can't do and the appropriateness of boys telling them what they can and can't do. So it starts there. But also in Wales particularly, we have a massive problem with older men of the boomer age absolutely thinking they rule the country and that they should say and do what they like. And that's a massive problem too. I don't know what it's like in America with sort of guys in their 50s and 60s, 60s and 70s really, isn't it?
Yeah. I like the whole, you know, what Craig said. I mean, what can men do? Yeah, I think it is important. I mean, they do need to be educated. You know, men need to know from, like you say, from an early age, what is and is not appropriate. When you're out running, and I like the whole, you know, if you see something, say something. Men, you know, when you see women running, first of all, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just leave them alone. we don't want to have a conversation. I've been on the trail many times where a man comes up next to me and starts talking. And I know they're just trying to be nice, but it's like, you know, just, I'm already on edge. Just leave me alone. But at the same time, I mean, you can probably see if somebody is being harassed or maybe they're uncomfortable, and just a simple, are you okay? You know, maybe they're just fighting with their boyfriend and they'd be like, we're fine, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, definitely you see something, say something. And like you say, telling other men, you know, what is and is not appropriate. Just educating. I mean, they need to know it's not appropriate. Maybe a man's leaning out the window telling me I look sexy because they think they're complimenting me, but it's creepy and it's awful and we don't like it. You know,
I had a very interesting thing happen on, sorry, but I had a very interesting thing happen on social media where I was talking about this kind of thing. And a man got really angry with me when I said, do you know what? It would be he was talking about how he compliments women. I said, do you know what? It'd be much better if you didn't do that. And he was like, how dare you tell me what to do? Of course, it's a nice thing to do. And I shall carry on doing it. I said, well, some women might think it's harassment. Well, you don't know. You don't speak for all women. I'm like, oh, hun, you know, oh. 56 years of this. What you want? How many scenarios? Do you hear me, Angie? How many scenarios do you want me to go through here?
Right. You're like, you might think that I don't speak for all women, but oh, by the way, I do.
Yeah.
I don't think that, just from my perspective, I don't think that there is discourse between men about how they should be respectful of women. I don't feel like that is a conversation that is had between men. You know, maybe a conversation that's had in between fathers and sons. Maybe that does happen. But I don't think any man that I know would say to a friend, hey, have you catcalled women while they're running lately? You shouldn't do that.
Right.
And it's a disappointment, I don't know how we raise the bar in terms of expectations about what the discourse should look like. But I do think that something, obviously, the fact that at all ages, we're always in peril, it's a problem. And, you know, we have to find some way. Craig, what would you see yourself doing to make a change as a man and as a fellow runner?
Well, I guess aside from hopefully doing this kind of conversation, but just to go back and say in terms of the question you asked around, do men have those conversations? No, I don't think we do. I doubt I've ever sat around in a room with my mates and said, oh, what do we think about catcalling women when they're out running? And I'd like to think my friends are pretty reasonable people, but wouldn't do it. But it's not a conversation you have. It's not something that comes up. And particularly if you're with people you know less well, there might be a feeling that you'd be considered, you know, you're weak, you're soil, whatever the word is it for today. And it's just not worth the hassle of doing that, because some blokes will just be idiots about it. You're getting stupid arguments and so on. So, yeah, we don't necessarily talk about things like that, and perhaps that should happen more often. From my own personal point of view, I just try to be respectful. I'd never approach somebody, a woman I didn't know when I was out running. I know there's different views on this and so on, but if I saw a woman coming the other way, I would occasionally cross the road and so on. Now, maybe that's unnecessary, but I just think it doesn't do any harm. So I'd do something like that. And yeah, I mean, for want of a better sort of phrase, just don't be an idiot.
I know.
Try and be reasonable.
Do you know, though, what I found really interesting was that before I'm happily married, by the way, to a man, and I have lots of male friends. But before I joined Running Punks, I had a very poor opinion on men in public. Very, very bad, very poor idea of them. And then I met the men in Running Punks, and they are, to a man, lovely people. One of the interesting things that we discovered is that lots of men didn't know this happened.
Ah.
They didn't know that women were harassed wherever. And we'd also had conversations about, I'm in this part, I've got these buttons here. I'm part of a group called Safe Gigs for Women as well, because I've been assaulted at gigs when you see bands. And that is a very common thing. And I started talking to the people, to the people in the group, and they were like, what, you've been assaulted at gig? And I said, well, why don't you ask your wife or your girlfriend or your mum or your sister or your auntie or your cousin whether they've experienced that? And they went away and they came back and they were like, oh my God, they've all been harassed at gigs. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And ask them if they exercise outside. Ask them if they've ever been harassed. And they go and they come back and they go, oh my God, it's a nightmare. And I said, yes, yes, it is. So for us, I found that very interesting, that lots of men just didn't know. And then they were appalled.
I do find that slightly surprising. I don't know how people can't know if they watch the news.
This was a couple of years ago, Craig. This was pre-Sarah Everard in the UK.
And perhaps pre-Me Too, which I think has made a massive difference.
Hmm. No, not in the UK. Right. I don't think I love Me Too. I think it's fantastic, but I think it has greater resonance in America than it does in this country.
Sure.
I really do. I don't know. Do you think that too, Angie?
I agree with you. I think Me Too is almost a uniquely American thing.
Yeah. It really did raise awareness. I thought that was a really great thing that happened here, and people were surprised. You know, how many people they knew were like, yeah, oh yeah, it's happened to me too. And they're like, really?
Yeah. But I think in Britain, I think men just don't want to think about it, because fundamentally they want to carry on with their liberties at stake, I think.
Right.
I think that genuinely, that's how they feel. And it's like, you can't tell me what to do. For example, when the pandemic hit, it was discovered through various pieces of research that men wouldn't wash their hands because they were being instructed to. Oh. And it was very much, you can't tell me what to do, so I'm not going to. And it's very much, in Britain, this sort of sense of freedom for men is very, very high.
Right. I think, you know, you think about COVID and how all the Americans didn't want to comply with the health advice. Most of the Americans didn't want to comply with the health advice for men. And so that is really interesting. I think back when I first the first real, I'm just going to segue into something. The first time that I ever really thought about not making it back from exercise was when Sherry Arnold got killed. That was 2012. She was the girl who was running out in the middle of nowhere in Montana, and she was assaulted and killed by two men. She never thought, you know, she never thought for one minute that she wasn't going to come back from that run. And I feel like there has to be something that we can do as a community of runners to, across the whole world, raise awareness to the fact that this should not happen. We should be able to wear what we want, do what we want, run where we want, but, you know, walk, skip, I don't care, but we should have the exact same freedom that any man does to be able to do whatever it is that we want, and we don't. And I don't know how to change it, but I feel like as a community of runners, we have to figure this out. It has to get better.
See, I absolutely, Angie. One of the problems I have, though, is I'm often in these conversations, and I've been on the radio, I've been on the television. I was doing something with a group of people who want to do a campaign for Wales around domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And they all say, what do you think we should do? And my answer is, I don't know. Why have I got the answers? I don't have any answers. I'm just telling you about my experiences. Mm-hmm. Why is it incumbent on me to come up with an answer for something, for a problem that I haven't raised? Mm-hmm. I don't do this, so I don't have an answer for it. My answer is the massive macro issue of patriarchy, and that men need to be taught to not harass women. But there's very, very little appetite for that. It's all about what can women do to keep themselves safe. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, there's nothing we can do. There is nothing we can do to keep ourselves safe.
The lens always turns back to us. Yeah. Never back to the perp, ever.
No. I think that's a really good point to bring this conversation to a conclusion. And thank you all so much for joining us today on Running Tales. It was a fascinating discussion. Anyone listening to this, if you have any ideas of what can be done, let us know. We're happy to keep this conversation going. Personally, I think it's about time big government and education did something about the whole thing, really. And maybe that would get us somewhere. But one to keep kicking around, really. And let's try and keep this conversation going. And once again, thank you all so much for joining me today.